From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. If you're hearing us right now, the predictions for the Mayan apocalypse were clearly a bit off. They did say change was coming, and that is true. But for now, on with the show. This week, a little something special for your blue suede Christmas stockings.
I'm an Elvis interpreter as opposed to a translator. I'm translating it through Latino eyes, through Chicano eyes.
A visit with Elvis, the Mexican Elvis. Then more musical treats and a year-end visit with Alt Latino.
It was very hard to narrow the list down because there was a lot of great music in Latin alternative and in Latin music in general.
And finally, celebrating the season in East Harlem, New York City.
El Coquito is like an eggnog, but more superb.
All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Quédense con nosotros. Stay with us. This week, a return to our occasional check-in with Victor Landa, editor of the Latino website News Taco. He joins us from the studios of KSTX in San Antonio, Texas. Welcome back to Latino USA, Victor.
Gracias, Maria. Glad to be here.
Okay, so let's catch up with one of the biggest items in immigration news this year, the Deferred Action Program. When it was announced in June, there were a lot of questions, a lot of doubts about the program to give young undocumented people a temporary way to legally live, attend school, and work in the United States. So where do things stand now, Victor?
Yes, Maria. The most recent numbers we have is that there have been 355,000 people that have been accepted for deferred action. That actually boils down to 4,433 requests a day. And there are still about 157 plus requests that are under review at the moment.
So does that mean that the program is considered a success or not?
Depending on who you speak to, right, there's between 800,000 and 1.2 million people that qualified for deferred action. And I don't know if there was this expectation that in August, in mid-August, when they started accepting applications, that people were going to rush and start applying. But there is a process. And I think there was a wait-and-see attitude among many of the people that do qualify. So this trickle effect started kind of slowly, and it's starting to increase. And we're almost at what was expected to be the halfway point of the people that are eligible. So I think the expectation is that pretty soon, hopefully with the new year, more people are going to start applying. So in that sense, I think it's starting to be seen as a success.
Another bit of big news for undocumented students was the December 11th announcement of a $1 million gift to the University of California, Berkeley, this to provide scholarships to undocumented students. Why is this scholarship so unusual?
It's unusual because it's the first of its kind. There's apparently or approximately 200 students from 20 different countries at Berkeley that, because of their status, don't qualify for Pell Grants, can't get loans, can't get work study. And this is at the federal level, because in California, they do have the California Dream Act that states that undocumented students can have access to state aid as the same as all other students in California. But on the federal level, they can't. And this is unusual because it's the first of its kind that a university, in this case Berkeley, is taking the lead and doing something to help provide financial aid for specifically the students that are known as dreamers.
Let's move on to the island of Puerto Rico. When I read about this, I have to say my jaw dropped. I think it's fascinating. The Department of Corrections on the island of Puerto Rico has hit upon essentially a very unusual way they think that could deter crime. What is it?
They've now had three of their inmates, and the inmates are chosen because of good behavior, to start tweeting about the life behind bars and what life is like being incarcerated. And, you know, I like to think of it as a new twist on an old idea, because this is not unlike the old Scared Straight programs. I'm sure you remember them, where they would take at-risk kids and take them into a prison and really scare them about what it was like to be incarcerated. And then they'd broadcast this so that it would act like a deterrent, right? So kids would not want to go into a life of crime. Well, this is taking that idea and putting into this new medium, and it's tweeting. It's basically taking advantage of Twitter, and these inmates are tweeting their life behind bars.
Which is interesting, because in Puerto Rico, you know, people behind bars are actually allowed to vote, very different than what happens here in the United States on the mainland. There's a different sense of who prisoners are, no?
Yes, there is. And it makes sense that it would come out of Puerto Rico, that an idea like this would surface in Puerto Rico, especially given recently that there's been an increase of crime and violent crime in Puerto Rico as well. They're being very creative about how they tackle this.
All right, so let's talk about the Mayans. When I was in Guatemala, I met several Mayans who said, listen, you guys are saying that we're predicting that the world is going to end. We never said it was going to end, just that there would be big changes at the end of 2012. What's the story?
The story is we're seeing big changes, and it's not so much the end of times as the beginning of a new, depending on who you talk to, the new consciousness, a new way of seeing things. It's really not the end of the world as we know it. You know, and those are two of the big misconceptions that popular media in the U.S. has sort of taken hold of. One is that, you know, December 21st of 2012 is going to be the end of the world, and the other is that they keep confusing the Aztec calendar with the Mayan calendar. And, those are two things that I think are very wrong.
All right. So I'm looking forward to the new year.
I am very much so.
All right, Victor, thanks for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria.
Victor Landa is the editor of News Taco. He joined us from the studios of KSTX in San Antonio, Texas. For news updates throughout the week, visit us at latinousa.org or follow us on Twitter where we are Latino USA. That's all one word. And we're back in 30 segundos. That's 30 seconds. So stay with us. Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. If it's Christmas, it must be time for Elvis, a.k.a. Mexican Elvis, a.k.a. Robert Lopez. Every December, Lopez, a Seattle-based performer, is on the road bringing audiences his impressive review of Chicano-fied Christmas classics with as many as 14, you count them, 14 costume changes. Brooklyn was one of the first stops in this year's Mexmas tour. Latino USA producer Nadia Raymond has our story.
Buenas noches, Brooklyn!
Cue in a small, dark-haired, pompadoured man wearing a Santa suit. Beneath all that red is Robert Lopez, a.k.a. Elvis, the 52-year-old Mexican Elvis.
I'm an Elvis interpreter as opposed to a translator. I'm translating it through Latino eyes, through Chicano eyes, and saying, you know, well, this is our version. It's like if Liberace taught Chicano studies, that would be Elvis. Viva Las Vegas turns into Viva La Raza.
In Elvis's hands, classic Elvis lyrics like, you ain't nothing but a hound dog, become, you ain't nothing but a chihuahua. And the line, don't you step on my blue suede shoes, goes like this.
No. Peace of peace without you, the soulless. No. Where's us looking kid in a piece of space without the suit?
If you're an LA rockabilly kid, this concert is your church, and Elvis is your patron saint. The show is filled with Spanglish spitting, tattooed West Coast rock and rollers. But in between, you can also see well-dressed middle-aged Manhattanites and young punk rockers. Nanette Simmons is an Elvis convert, and she loves spreading the gospel.
I brought 10 of my friends here tonight to see him, and two of them were virgin Elvis, and now they fell in love, and now they're hooked. I love Elvis. I love him.
It's hard not to love Elvis. On stage, he's larger than life. He does splits and sparkly jumpsuits. He gets a little too up close and personal with the bassist. He even pretends to snort cocaine. But the man behind the mustache is surprisingly soft-spoken and even a little shy. Think Clark Kent. 25 years ago, Lopez was a curator at a small art gallery in Los Angeles. He put on a show about Elvis, and afterwards, a fan of the King told him about an Elvis tribute show in Memphis. Lopez dared himself to try and impersonate the King. He says he believes in making a fool of oneself in public. So he picked up the phone and used his knowledge of an old Elvis film to get the gig.
I actually lied when I was doing it and said, oh, there's a kid, a shoeshine boy in the film Fun in Acapulco. And I said, I am that boy grown up.
Mexico, Mexico, they've got muchas, muchachas, amigo.
Put a mustache with a Sharpie and faked it until I made it.
Never saw such adorable creatures.
The Memphis show hired him, and Elvis never looked back. He's put on many shows and themed tours, even pretending to run for president under the slogan Elvis for Press. But his favorites are the Merry Mexmas Christmas shows.
Christmas was Elvis's favorite time of the year, and so it's kind of mixed with the Elvis mythology, and so I used things that were important to him, and I put a mustache on him. White Christmas, snow, or nothing that we had in San Diego and Chula Vista, and so the idea of saying, I'm dreaming of a brown Christmas took on a whole new idea.
Just like my ones in Mexico.
Elvis also sprinkles politics like fake snow throughout his entire act. The hit Suspicious Minds becomes Immigration Time.
I can't walk out because my foot's caught in this border fence.
And he writes new lyrics riffing on classic Christmas carols.
And this was to hark the herald to sing that a new king had been born, a Mexican king, who would spread the culture of Elvis and the culture of Latino, viva la raza.
Concert goer Carlos Fung was raised in Mexico, and he gets the many layers of Elvis.
What he has to say is very poignant. I mean, I know it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, the show, but there's a certain relevance about the whole political aspect.
Like many fans, Carlos sticks around after the show to get his picture taken with El Rey, the king, or to buy a Snow Way Jose Elvis record, or to get his very own Elvis for Press M&Ms. But props aside, Elvis sees his interpreter role as something deeper.
What I am is satire and paying homage on the Elvis culture, but also saying Elvis is an American icon. Being Mexican is part of the American culture, so you too can wear the crown.
And this is a little song to express the way I feel.
Have yourself a very merry Mexmas.
After the show ends, Elvis wipes away the mustache. He's calm and soft-spoken once more. In other words, Robert Lopez is back. At least until the next Merry Mexmas show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has left the chimney. Thank you and good night.
For Latino USA, I'm Nadia Raymond.
One of the traditional end-of-the-year media rituals is the best-of list. But when it comes to Latin music, this year has brought more than any list could possibly contain. So instead, we wanted to explore the biggest surprises of the year. And for that, we're joined by our friend Felix Contreras. He's co-host of NPR's Alt Latino podcast. And he brings us some of Alt Latino's favorite things for Latin music in 2012. Bienvenido again to Latino USA, Felix.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me again.
What do you have in terms of your favorite all-time surprises for 2012 in Latin music?
You know, it's hard. It was very hard to narrow the list down because there was a lot of great music in Latin alternative and in Latin music in general. And that's sort of what we're going to do today. We're going to divide it up and take a look at Latin alternative and then take a wider look at some of the more significant recordings.
And you want to start off actually talking about by one of my favorite bands that it's kind of surprising that they would be on this list because they've been around for a long time. That's the all-time favorite, Café Tacuba from Mexico.
You know, it's amazing that they were part of that pioneering wave of rock and español in the early 90s, and they are still so musically relevant. They took about 5 years off. They came back with an album called El Objeto Antes Llamado Disco.
Which means the object that used to be called a record.
You know, and that's part of that. That's the first clue that they're doing something interesting.
And you like the song Ollita de Altamar.
It's one of the ones that I had to choose. If I had to choose one of them, I could have played the whole album. We would have been happy.
Now, someone else, Felix, that is on your radar in a big way, her name is Carla Morrison. And frankly, if you like Latin American alternative, you have heard about Carla Morrison.
Carla Morrison is this very young singer from Mexico, and she has kind of taken the indie alternative world by storm because she's got this very sweet, ethereal voice, amazing songwriting, and it's very introspective, the kind you would expect from, you know, in the tradition of Joni Mitchell. I got to tell you, the first time her manager gave me a CD, I put the CD on the computer in my room, and her voice, it spread across the room like a nice fog, because that's how her voice hangs in the air. The song I chose today is from a soundtrack from a movie called Hecho en México.
Soy otro mensajero, uno más de todos ellos. Los árboles y las flores, pajaritos y pichones. Piénsalo bien, hay algo que entender.
So from the words of Carla Morrison to the music of Miguel Senón, there are no words here to what he does, but he is one of my all-time favorite jazz musicians.
Miguel Senón is a young Puerto Rican saxophonist. He plays alto saxophone and he's a composer. And he made a series of albums, I think this is the third in a trio of albums, where he's re-examining different aspects of Puerto Rican music, but from a jazz perspective. And it's not exactly Latin jazz. I think it falls more along the lines of what his former boss, Ray Barreto, calls jazz Latin. And the album that I really enjoyed this year was Alma Adentro.
And Miguel Senón has been recognized with a Genius Award. But then you have the story of someone by the name of Sugar Man, who almost no one in this country knew about. And yet he's got this fascinating story.
His name is Sixto Rodriguez. In the late 1960s in Detroit, he was a singer-songwriter in the vein of Bob Dylan, you know, very socially conscious lyrics. He was taking on the issues of the day of the war, because the Vietnam War was still going on. His first album was called Cold Fact. And it just went nowhere, and it just faded from the scene for whatever reason. Fast forward like 15 years, and someone in South Africa finds the album, and Rodriguez became this icon of the anti-apartheid movement, a musical icon in South Africa. So, stay with me. The documentary is the story of this filmmaker who goes to find the legend of Rodriguez and finds out that he's still alive and, in fact, was working construction that just goes by his last name. And that's how he made his albums back in the 70s.
Did he know that he was famous in South Africa?
Had no idea. Didn't have a clue until these documentary guys found him. I call this one of the great stories of the year because you can tell when he was performing how much he enjoys finally getting his music out, because he's talking about a war. He's talking about a lot of the things that are still relevant right now. His music, to my ears, is timeless.
Love it. A Mexican from Detroit who's a star in South Africa because of civil rights.
What a country. I love it.
It's good to talk to you again, Felix.
Thanks, Maria.
Felix Contreras is the co-host of the NPR podcast, All Latino.
Sugar Man, won't you hurry? 'Cause I'm tired of these scenes. For a blue coin, won't you bring back all those colors to my dreams? Silver magic ships you carry, jumpers, coke, sweet Mary Jane.
Coming up, we find the Christmas spirit in a house-to-house search in East Harlem.
And it's very difficult for us, but we come because we want it, and we like it, and we have fun.
Las Posadas en el Barrio de Nueva York. That's coming up on Latino USA. No se vayan.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. For this week's show, we bring you two Christmas traditions from New York City's El Barrio. First, we accompany some Mexican immigrants while they recreate the path of those other long-ago migrants seeking shelter in Bethlehem.
When I was a kid, my family would load up the station wagon in Chicago and drive to Mexico to spend La Navidad in the home country. Once I had my own kids, we spent many holidays in my husband's home country, the Dominican Republic. But this year, my family is staying in New York. You know, the kids wanted that traditional, quintessential American snow-white Christmas. But I live in a modern urban center in the United States, so just how far from a Latin American Christmas did I really think I could get? About 50 people, adults and children, are singing in the narrow hallway of a five-story walk-up apartment building. They're celebrating one of the most traditional rituals of the Mexican Christmas season, La Posada, a reenactment of a homeless Joseph and Mary looking for shelter before the birth of Jesus. We've come to my friend Silvia's apartment. The entire front room has been cleared of furniture to make room for the arrival of the Posada. There's just a stand where the nativity scene will go, a 3-foot-tall replica of the manger with statues of Joseph and Mary. Suddenly, dozens of bundled-up women, men, and kids are climbing the steep staircase, singing and carrying the nativity scene. The point is to try to convince the people inside the apartment to open their home to those of us on the outside, representing Joseph and Mary. Silvia's apartment door finally opens, and this huge group of people tries to squeeze in.
Vengan, vengan!
En el nombre del cielo.
Carmen Garcia organized the posada with her husband. Carmen came to the United States when she was 7, but Mexico is still in her heart.
We feel like we are in Mexico. I know it's totally different because in Mexico they have a big yard and we don't have to go up and down on the staircase with the strollers, with the babies, and you know. And it's very difficult for us, but we come because we want it, and we like it, and we have fun.
But the most fun is for the kids. It's the moment they've been waiting for, breaking la piñata, just like I did as a kid in Mexico. I ask someone, an older woman who's joined in with the singing, what it means to keep the Posada tradition alive in New York. She says, life can be hard here and monotonous, and there can be sadness and insecurity about our futures. This is a way in which we just bring alegría, joy, into people's homes. In this holiday season, I will take the alegría from the streets of Spanish Harlem to heart.
Now for our second Christmas story from El Barrio, a taste of coquito. Coquito is a coconut-based type of eggnog that Puerto Ricans make for Christmas. Individual recipes are a source of a lot of pride and fiercely guarded secrets. Every year, dozens of aspirants around the city enter the Coquito Masters, looking to establish coquito supremacy. Here's an audio postcard from the competition.
My name is Emilio Carrillo. I'm here today to compete for the Coquito Masters qualifier. A coquito is like an eggnog, but more superb. It isn't only for Hispanics. We'll see what happens.
My mom was the second place winner last year's Coquito competition. And her Coquito's amazing, not just because she's my mother, because I would give her a hard time. My name is Victor Cruz. I think with Coquito, you know, it reminds me of Christmas time, family, friends, music, Benil.
I'm Joyce Ruiz. I'm from the neighborhood, trying to bring the contest winner back here, right where she started. I keep it original, you know, straight from grandma's kitchen, you know. This level, I always do really good. First place, 3 years in a row. Hopefully the same thing happens today.
People are representing their grandmothers, their tias, their mothers, their fathers, their uncles, so their hometowns. We got some rivalries going on, and that's the most important thing, which is hilarious. I love it. I love it. My name is Debbie Quiñones, and I'm the founder of Coquito Masters. Tonight is a qualifier, and it's a blind taste test. And we try and make it as aligned with culinary excellence, like wine tasting.
I think I'm sampling D, one of the coquitos. A little too nutmeggy, but I tried E, had a nice, like, fresh coconut taste.
We have 5 coquitos this evening, and we're asking that you rate from 1 to 10.
That D tastes different from the E. It tastes like mint.
When you make coquito, after you refrigerate it for a week, it's like a cognac. It blends all. It becomes one, if it's a good one very nice drink.
It's, like, full of cinnamon. This tastes like holiday.
The best coquito win, right?
In first place,
my name is Emilio Carrillo, and I won the Coquito Masters qualifier. My efforts in making my coquito better every year, it came out, and I hope to continue on to the Coquito Masters, and hopefully I'll be a winner.
That was one of the qualifiers of the 11th annual Coquito Master Competition, held at the Grand Teatro Doro restaurant in East Harlem, New York City. And for this week, that's Latino USA. If you have any comments or suggestions, pick up the phone and dial 646-571-1228. That's 646-571-1228. Just tell us how to say your name clearly and where you're calling from. Our program is produced by Carolina Gonzalez, Deborah George, Nadia Raymond, Andres Caballero, Lita Hartman, and Michael Jones. We had additional production help from Manoli Weatherall and NPR New York, and additional engineering this week from Michael Johnson. Latino USA is produced by The Futuro Media Group in Harlem. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join me again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Latino USA is funded in part by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the Joyce Foundation, working to improve the quality of life in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. And the SCAN Foundation, committed to aging with dignity and independence at thescanfoundation.org. And the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business at Yeshiva University at cysimsfoundation.org. This is NPR.